How little we know, how much to discover.
Hello, podcast listeners. This is Santa Fe Stories, and I'm your host, Nancy Udell. Hey, listen to this little piece of tape.
And we agree that we're going to be doing a couple of parts of Arkansas.
Yep, the whole way around. Okay. So outside of this little ecosystem, they'll let me do stuff. To not think that Anthony and Mark don't have a stranglehold over this thing is crazy. Because the governor runs this shit and they run the government.
That was a couple clips from a tape made in 2006 of a paid advisor to the state of New Mexico, Aldous Equities' Saul Meyer, explaining to his partners how Richardson cronies, the Carreras, pick the funds that will be used to invest New Mexico's money. The tape was made public for the first time last week, almost 6 years after it was made. Today, I interview Mike Gallagher, investigative reporter for the Albuquerque Journal, who's been covering and uncovering this story for the last 3 years. If it weren't for Mike's reporting, we really wouldn't know as much of this story as we do. And one thing we do know is that it's really complicated.
It's a furball. You know, in World War II, the pilots, when they would talk about, you know, like over Guadalcanal, the Japanese planes, they have 20 Japanese planes come in and they have, you know, 10 Marine fighter planes go up, and they all of a sudden it would just disintegrate where everybody's shooting at one another, and basically they fought until they ran out of bullets and fuel, and then they went home, and then the next day they'd start over again. And they called it a furball, and that's what we got.
So today we're basically going to try to walk you through the furball. The story starts after the dot-com bust and during the run-up to the 2008 collapse, when historically reliable 8% returns on investments for pension funds and other state monies turned out to be a myth. This story really does have national scope because all over the country, state money managers started looking for ways to flesh out their returns. And many states, including New Mexico, started to allow a portion of public funds to be invested in what are known as alternative investments. Everything from private equity to real estate to collateralized debt obligations or CDOs. New Mexico's money, or the money at stake in this story, was basically in two pots, about $15 million in the state's Permanent Endowment Fund at the SIC, or State Investment Council, you'll hear those letters a lot, and about $8 million at the Teachers Retirement Fund held at the ERB, or the Education Retirement Board. And here's where the pay to play comes in.
Basically, in these alternative investments, it turns out that unknown to the general public and to even to members of these boards, there were these third-party marketers who would seek to sell these alternative investments to pension funds like the ERB or trust funds like the State Investment Council. These third-party placement agents would earn very large fees if they could get these deals done. What developed over a period of time is that certain of these placement agents developed a gatekeeper system in which a politically connected individual, in New York it was a man named Hank Morris, in New Mexico it appears that it was Anthony Carrera, in order to get your, you know, an investment in a fund that you represented, you had to go through that gatekeeper, either through splitting fees with his son Mark Carrera, or doing other political favors like helping Mark, you know, Mark Carrera or others place their funds in states where you knew another gatekeeper. There was a lot of back scratching going on. All of these gatekeepers were, no matter where you find them around the country, are politically connected to the either the long-term political power structure, say like the Democratic Party in the state of New York, or were connected to, you know, Bill Richardson. And Anthony Carrera was an extremely close personal friend, a financial advisor, traveled extensively with him throughout the country. He had that type of relationship.
Mike's going to tell us a bit more about Anthony Carrera, his son Mark, and Gary Bland, the principal state investment advisor. Just one other detail about Anthony Carrera that has been in many of Mike's articles. Carrera is a retired investment advisor who worked in New York before setting up business here in New Mexico in 1989, but he was accused of insider trading in New York and paid a $500,000 fine and was barred from the securities industry for a time as part of a settlement of that case. Enter Anthony Carrera.
He's the person who determined that the state should hire Gary Bland as the state's state investment officer. The person making the decision on which funds that got, you know, received the state's investments was Gary Bland. Gary Bland, according to lawsuits, you know, other information, was in daily, including interviews with Gary Bland, was in daily contact with Anthony Carrera, discussing markets, discussing funds, and Anthony Carrera's recommendations carried a great deal of weight. And that is clear, that it was his recommendation. Even when we asked for Gary Bland's resume, when it was sent to us, it had Anthony Carrera's fax number on it.
Oh, it came from Carrera's office.
It came from Anthony Carrera's office.
Oh, my gosh.
The main placement agent was Mark Carrera, Anthony's son. And Mark shared in more than $22 million in placement agent fees. Gary Bland, if he made a if he said, "I like this," apparently, for the most part, everybody would go along with him. Not everyone likes it, and particularly Frank Foy didn't like it. He didn't like the way they were mirroring the SIC investment.
Okay, Mike mentions Frank Foy. Foy was the chief investment officer at ERB, mirroring Gary Bland's position at SIC. He was ultimately forced out and filed two whistleblower suits, which we'll talk more about later. But in the tapes that were filed on Friday for the first time, they were filed in one of Frank Foy's lawsuits. The Aldis partners can be heard talking about how they'll have to change up at least a few of the funds that they're investing in until Frank Foy and his boss can be fired. Foy and his boss are referred to as obstacles. Here's Mike on the tapes, how they came to be recorded in the first place in 2006, and a little bit more of what they show.
Well, basically, it's the partners. Saul Meyer had several partners in Aldis Equity.
And Saul Meyer is the head of
Saul
Aldis
Meyer
Equity.
Is the founding partner. And the way that the firm is structured at this point, the other partners cannot fire him. Deutsche Bank is coming in to buy up 48% of Aldis. So everybody on among the partners is in for a big payday. But Deutsche Bank tells them they have to restructure the way this is set up because you can't have one partner who can't be fired. So they're restructuring this, and the other partners have begun to figure out that Saul Meyer has been involved in this pay-to-play kickback deal in New York.
And this is all happening back in
2006. This is happening in 2006. These partners are hoping to get Saul Meyer on tape, making admissions that they're involved in very criminal behavior or unethical behavior. So they're leading him on, and they're trying to, the tape itself is actually about 3 hours long.
Have you heard it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I've read the transcripts, and it's really an unbelievable sort of trip, and it's very difficult to follow because you have to kind of understand who the players are in California, who the players are in New York, and then the overlap with both of those into New Mexico. It's just sort of like you go on a road trip on private equity corruption throughout the country.
One more explanatory note. Aldis Equity was hired by the state of New Mexico to advise the state on making alternative investments, in this case, private equity investments. Aldis made $1.5 million a year to give advice to the state of New Mexico, just like if you or I hired a financial advisor to recommend funds or stocks. But here, that structure is turned on its head. The Carreras tell Aldis which funds to recommend to the state, and Gary Bland, handpicked by the Carreras, invests the state money in those funds, whether or not they're good investments, and that's what Frank Foy was pushing back against. In any event, these tapes are tapes of the partners of Aldus Equity, New Mexico's financial advisor, discussing investments.
So Saul, you know, they start asking questions, and this goes on for about 3 hours, and then they hit the New Mexico portion of our little jaunt here, and they begin talking about New Mexico. And the tone of this, there's a very gangsterish tone about how they're doing business. I mean, yeah, it could have been, you know, something out of The Godfather, or, you know, could be a tape of a drug deal, the way these guys are talking about stuff. And it's very sinister in a lot of ways. I mean, they're talking about public funds. I've been asking to get, you know, to look at these tapes for, you know, or listen to these tapes for a long time. People have them. The public doesn't, but a lot of different people involved in lawsuits, and the FBI has them. The partners who haven't been charged with any crimes, you know, were making these available to the Attorney General in New York. They were making them available to, you know, everybody. But the only people who haven't heard them are the public, is the general public. I've been trying to push various people who have them to getting them into the public realm. And on Friday, Frank Foy's attorney, Victor Marshall, made a filing in one of his lawsuits in Santa Fe. So the clearer portions of the transcript. And one of the things they're talking about is making recommendations on funds that they didn't think were good funds to the state of New Mexico to put in, you know, investments in, because of the placement agents involved, and not because they're good investments. They're saying, you know, we have to give Mark Curry, you know, we have to recommend this fund. This guy's, you know, involved with it, and he's a buddy of Mark Carrera's. You know, they feed one another funds, so we've got to make a recommendation on this fund.
And Saul Meyer, actually, in this transcript that was I read in your article on Sunday, actually takes a piece of paper out of his pocket, which is the list of funds that Carrera has told him they need to invest in.
Right, and they're going through these funds, and they hit one particular company, and they're like, you know, why do we have to invest in this fund? I mean, the other partners are like, this isn't a very good fund.
And what does Saul Meyer say?
Well, can I look it
yeah,
up?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I can get it right
sure.
here. To not think that that Anthony and Mark don't have a stranglehold over this thing is crazy, because the governor runs this shit and they run the governor.
Right. So Saul Meyer basically tells his partners, when they say, look, this investment is a bad one, we don't want to make New Mexico invest in this, he says, if you think we're going to get to do anything else, you're crazy.
Yeah.
Richardson's in charge here, and Carrera's his man.
Right.
I mean, that's pretty now, tough stuff.
Right, it is very tough stuff. Now, the question is like, okay, now we know that there's a relationship between Aldus Equity and the Carreras, okay? We know that from the history, and we know that from other court records and stuff, and records at the SIC. The big question is that there's not a whole lot of record showing Saul Meyer having direct dealings with Bill Richardson. So how much does Saul Meyer know directly about Bill Richardson as opposed to what he's told by, say, Anthony Carrera or others who may have contact with Richardson? Is easily a step removed from Bill Richardson.
And that's always the problem with these things, right?
Well,
is can they make it stick?
Right. And so it's a question of this is what he believes to be the case, okay?
Or even if he's telling the truth, that the Carreras told him that, where the Carreras puff. I mean, someone could say
right.
The Carreras were just puffing. They don't really have that kind of control.
Well,
they had all these people fooled.
But, yeah, they had in that case, they had a whole lot of people fooled. Because everybody was foul playing to their tune. And they did for well over almost 5 years until they got exposed. The Carrera's actual involvement doesn't become public till March 2009.
Okay, so that's the basics of the game they were playing. And then in 2009, things start to unravel And Mike Gallagher was a big part of that by figuring out that Aldous Equity was involved in a lawsuit in New York where Andrew Cuomo was prosecuting the same kind of skullduggery that was going on here. Here's Mike on how he started figuring this out.
I got a tip from a buddy of mine who's a lawyer in New York who called up and said, you know, Cuomo's involved in something you probably need to look at. He was not a law enforcement guy. He was just a trial lawyer. So I got their indictment on Hank Morris emailed to me, and then I got the SEC off the PACER, the SEC lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I talked with my editor, and he said, well, you know, we'll try to figure this out. We got to really pursue this. So we did the story on putting together the SEC lawsuit and the AG's indictment. Thanks to my editor, we really had to kind of structure a very difficult story, laying out what was went on in New York and who, if anybody, kind of connected to New Mexico. And the main player was Aldous at that time. We run that story. Well, Aldous goes nuts.
And that was in March of 2009.
Right. And then I get a tip from somebody else in New Mexico that says, you know, you really need to ask about placement agents. So I talked with some people at the SIC and said, look, I'm going to file an IPRA. I want information about placement agents in connection with all the different alternative investments that you guys have been involved in.
IPRA is the Inspection of Public Records Act in New Mexico, which the Albuquerque Journal was actually instrumental in drafting and getting in place.
So you filed the IPRA with the SIC. What was their reaction?
I think it was varied. I think there were staff members who were ecstatic that the information was going out, because there were staff members at the SIC who had suspected for some time that there were real problems and had been beginning to gather information on some of these, you know, on third-party marketers, not always successfully. There were a lot of companies stalled them. And it becomes clear at the ERB that they were being lied to by Aldous about who the third-party marketers were on a bunch of the deals. They were doing everything they could to hide Mark Carrera's involvement. And they were the funds and Aldous were stalling with the SIC. The story out of New York breaks. It gives the staff at the SIC a lot more leverage to actually get the information.
And you filed
out
your IPRA request.
And I filed my IPRA request, and then they released a spreadsheet of who the marketers, the placement agents were, which funds they represented, how much was paid to them, you know, how much the investments were for, you know, when they were done and stuff. And it was really remarkable. I mean, you know, Mark Carrera was involved in over half the private equity deals. He was involved in all the CDO deals. But one of the key things, getting back to the CDOs in Vanderbilt, which we didn't know and that Frank didn't know, was that when we finally get the list of third-party placement agents and how much they were paid on each deal, lo and behold, Mark Carrera's been paid $5 million for this whole series in placement fees for a whole series of deals that SIC invested in with Vanderbilt and CDOs, and for the ERB investment, for providing nothing more than Gary Bland's address and phone number.
Well, you said you've seen these contracts between, for example, Vanderbilt and Carrera. What does those contracts say?
Those contracts basically say they are paying Mark Carrera and the different companies that fronted, that he was involved with, for providing contact information. And that is the name of the person to be contacted, the address, and the phone number. Who do we call? And that's essentially it.
Quick note, Vanderbilt is Vanderbilt Equity, one of the many funds that was hawking investments to New Mexico. And the CDOs they were selling were one of the investments that Frank Foy really pushed back on. And when Frank Foy got pushed out and later filed his whistleblower lawsuits, Vanderbilt Equity was one of the defendants. And you'll hear Mike and I talk about when that lawsuit was unsealed, because when a whistleblower suit is filed, it has to get approval to go forward. So while it was filed in 2008, it wasn't unsealed until 2009.
So the first Frank Foy lawsuit is unsealed in January of 2009. You've gotten this information about what went on in New York. You've kind of pieced that together. You and your editor have done a story on the CDOs, and then you file your IPRA request. You get all these records in. What happens next?
Things get start moving pretty quick, and we've got other people working on aspects of the story. The governor suspends the third-party marketers. They suspend all this. I mean, it was pretty much nonstop from April through June. Grand jury subpoenas from the Fed start, you know, just shooting out, boom, 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 boom. Saul Meyer gets indicted in New York. A bunch of other people that the New Mexico connections start becoming more and more clear that there's this overlap. The attorney general in New York at that time was Andrew Cuomo. He starts referring to a national matrix of corruption. You know, the whole thing begins to unravel. By September, Saul Meyer is pleading guilty. He says on the record at his plea that he made recommendations to the state of New Mexico on behalf of politically connected individuals and not based on his fiduciary responsibility to the state. He has not been sentenced to prison yet. It keeps getting put off. His sentence put off until March of this year.
They want to see how well he sings?
Well, it's basically, we'll know if the investigations in New Mexico are over and that nothing's going to happen when they actually sentence Saul Meyer.
You heard Mike mention that subpoenas were flying from the federal grand jury. Let's just take a minute and review the federal investigations.
But everyone will remember that about the time when Richardson was running for president against Obama, obviously ultimately lost, there was an ongoing federal investigation that was a pay-to-play, but it was a different issue. It had to do with bonds.
Right, it had to do with the GRIP highway bonds.
Okay.
For the Rail Runner train and some other stuff. That investigation was over by 6 months by the time the investment scandal began to ramp up in January with Frank's unsealing of Frank's first lawsuit.
So that one was over. It ended when the U.S. attorney said it would be closed with no charges, but did make a pretty unusual statement that their investigation did reveal that pressure from the governor's office resulted in the corruption of the procurement process.
Right. And choosing a company called CDR, which has since pleaded guilty to bid rigging of bonds throughout the country over a seven-year period. I think what happened in this case was that the U.S. attorney here recommended that they prosecute the case. That's what I think. Washington, D.C. got letters protesting that recommendation from Richardson's defense attorneys and other defense attorneys. They slowed the process down long enough for the statute of limitations to run on the specific allegations that the U.S. attorney here recommended that they indict on.
So in August of 2009, they shut that down. But then there was another investigation that started up almost immediately on the heels of that, not the one about paying off the alleged sexual harasser, but another one that has to do with all the stuff that we're talking about now.
Right. Now, there were grand jury subpoenas issued to the State Investment Council in, I'm going to say May of 2009 and ERB in June of 2009. I had a fight, again, using the Inspection of Public Records Act to get copies of those subpoenas from the state. I didn't get them from the feds. They're not allowed to give them out. I got them from the state who'd received them. And it laid out what information they wanted. They also received subpoenas from the Securities and Exchange Commission.
So SIC and ERB are getting all these subpoenas from the federal investigation.
It takes them months to respond to them because of the amount of information that they're required to turn over. In fact, it costs about $1.5 million for the SIC to finally put all of the documents together in a computerized file that they could turn over to fulfill all of the requirements of the subpoenas.
So while all this other stuff is going on and Frank Foy's lawsuit has been unsealed and you've been writing articles and finding out about the Carreras, the feds have been subpoenaing things. What happened to that what's going on with that federal litigation?
That's difficult to say. That's why I refer to it as entering that into dimensional space.
I guess
where federal investigations go, where we may or may never hear, may or may not ever hear of it.
So have they had any witnesses before the grand jury related to this pay-to-play scandal we're currently discussing?
I don't know.
So nobody knows anything?
No, yeah.
Except for the documents that you said, these subpoenas.
Yeah, in the documents, I think there's like 1.5 million files from the SIC that were subpoenaed.
Maybe they should just read your articles.
He'll
give them a leg up anyway on what's been going on here.
I don't want to comment on that. I got enough problems with these guys.
We don't know what's going on with them, though. It's a mystery. They're super secret. Every time somebody asks for a comment, they have no comment.
Right. It's at some point I'm going to have to do that story. I'm not prepared to do it yet.
Okay, so the federal investigation has entered an area of interdimensional space where, according to Mike, federal investigations go and may or may not ever be heard from again. But remember, this is the furball. It gets even more complicated.
Frank Foy filed two suits. One had to do with the CDOs. One had to do
with all this equity and the placement agents.
Gary King had to originally approve those suits going forward,
right,
which he did.
And being unsealed, and he did.
And he did. Then, in...
A few years later,
yeah. That was in 2009, they were unsealed. In last year, in June 2011... Mm-hmm. Gary King, our Attorney General, brought his own lawsuit on behalf of SIC as the Attorney General.
Well, but they had to pass a state statute to allow the SIC to actually go out and hire its own attorney.
So is that why it took so long?
Well, that was one of the things that was going on.
So when Gary King, the Attorney General, files his own suit on behalf of SIC, he basically says to Frank Foy and his lawyer, Victor Marshall, who you'll hear Mike mention, you guys can go home now, I'll handle this. And they say, no way, we don't trust you.
Most of the conflicts of interest that Victor now accuses Gary King of having existed when Gary King approved the filing of the lawsuits. You know, that Bruce Mellott was his campaign treasurer.
This whole state is like a small town. Part
of it is a small town because Victor and Gary were in the legislature together back in the 80s and worked closely on IPRA.
And Bruce Mellott, he was the
chairman of the Educational Retirement Board. He was appointed by Gary Johnson, a Republican, reappointed by Bill Richardson. He was Gary King's congressional campaign treasurer. He was Bill Richardson's campaign treasurer.
And he was the one who was yelling at Frank Foy because he was rude to the guy from Vanderbilt Capital.
Right. Right. And it's...
And is
now suing Saul Meyer and Gary Bland and a bunch of the other people for failure to tell him that they were doing a scam, and it wound up costing him his position and his company
now,
and everything else.
Didn't he also, was he the one, or was it Gary Bland who got the $350,000 loan from the Carreras?
Mellott got the loan from the Carreras.
Right.
Yeah, we don't know who else they gave money to either, or loaned money to.
All right.
Now,
so
Mellott has paid the loan back.
Well, that's good.
And he passed a polygraph.
Situation solved.
No, he passed it. Well, he passed a polygraph saying he didn't know that the Carreras were getting fees. It's basically I've been duped. You know,
right.
The I've been duped defense. It's a furball. You know, in World War II, the pilots, when they would talk about, you know, like over Guadalcanal, the Japanese planes, they have 20 Japanese planes come in and they have, you know, 10 Marine fighter planes go up and they'd, all of a sudden, it would just disintegrate where everybody's shooting at one another. And basically, they fought until they ran out of bullets and fuel, and then they went home, and then the next day they'd start over again. And they called it a furball, and that's what we got. And it's basically trying to explain it to people. It's sort of like, well, why don't we just wait till they finish, and then we'll figure out, we'll count the bodies up and figure out who's got what. I think Frank is a legitimate player in all this. Victor Marshall's a legitimate player. There's another, Bruce Mellott's filed his own lawsuit. That may actually go someplace. There's another lawsuit filed by Joe Goldberg, an excellent attorney on behalf of the ERB.
He's a nationally known plaintiff's lawyer.
Excellent attorney. Don't never hold, you know, discount the fact that, that Joe Goldberg is going to be able to take a lawsuit someplace. He's an excellent attorney.
So in the midst of the furball, Mike thinks, almost ironically, that Frank Foy's best chance of vindication is the SIC lawsuit brought by Gary King, largely because of Judge Sarah Singleton, who has that case and seems to be better equipped to handle it than the other judges who were handling the Foy cases. Basically, she's issued a ruling now allowing Frank Foy to intervene in Gary King's suit on behalf of SIC, so it's all sort of in one bundle before her.
Judge Pfeffer, who in Santa Fe, who's got one of the lawsuits, and Judge Pope in Los Lunas, who has the other Foy lawsuit, have been sort of like, what do we do with this? You know, it's, I mean, they're just on the face, they're enormously complicated. Then the legal situations are even getting worse. But the SIC lawsuit, the judge in that case has already ruled that Foy can intervene in the SIC lawsuit. She made a ruling that way. She's already thrown two defendants out. She is an excellent attorney and hasn't been on the bench that long. She's a Richardson appointee, but I don't think that's going to matter a bunch because she's pretty independent. She's a hell of a lawyer. Actually, Foy's best hope may be that lawsuit, because I think that's the one where they're going to really wind up getting the discovery. This thing's going to move. She's not going to put up with a lot of this nonsense, where Pfeffer and Pope have been around forever. I mean, they could be retired before these lawsuits are, you know, really come to a head.
So with all these lawsuits out there and lots at stake for New Mexico taxpayers, estimates are all over the map, and nobody knows, but it could be $500 million. That's billion with a B. Mike feels confident that there are plenty of deep pockets involved in this thing, that should the lawsuits be successful, the money is out there.
The Carlyle Group.
They've got some money.
I mean, this is the biggest private equity firm in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could probably buy Greece, you know.
if they haven't already.
You're right. There's a lot of people with deep pockets involved on the other end of these lawsuits. And I think a lot of them will get very nervous once a judge orders discovery and the depositions start flying around, you know, You know, I think that's when you'll see people coming to the table and saying, how do we end this?
All right, my final question for you, Mike. Do you think they can make the Richardson connection?
I don't know. I think that that's a real question. I don't think that you can, that the information is out there right now in the public place where you can say that Richardson was directly connected to specific deals or ordering them or recommending them to Bland or Malott. It's really sort of, you know, okay, we got 2 plus 1x equals 4, but we don't have anybody, and we know, and we can all say we know, you know, what x is, but the evidence saying what x is isn't there other than our own kind of logic and kind of figuring it out.
Let's just say, hypothetically, you've got a governor who has these pals who are longtime friends and associates and travel, you know,
are they
the
taking
Carreras.
Advantage of him?
Well, they make $22 million. What does he get?
Friendship. I don't know. I don't mean to be sarcastic.
No,
I mean, that's
the question everyone's going to ask.
I don't know that you can put it together without having Anthony Carrera explain it to you. He's the one that's going to, and Mark Carrera and Dave Conorino, and Bruce Malott's already said, hey, you know, I didn't know this was going on. No one told me.
The Carreras are really the link.
Right. And so I think, you know, until we know what they know, and we don't know what they know, we can't say that Bill Richardson was directly involved in all of this. I mean, people can make speculation. They can you know, kind of say, well, how could it have happened without him? I don't know that the, you know, on this particular investigation, whether this is really a Bill Richardson investigation. It really might be an Aldous Carrera third-party marketer investigation. It may not be that sexy for the feds, but it's something that needs to be done.
Well, Mike, I just want to thank you for you and the Albuquerque Journal and all our other local papers for the work that you do, which is nowhere near as highly compensated as the securities or venture capital world, but it's so important. We wouldn't know any of this if it weren't for your great articles in the Albuquerque Journal. And I want to encourage every single person who's listening to this show to subscribe to the Albuquerque Journal and the New Mexican, because we have to support our local papers or we would never know about all of this skullduggery.
And I don't think you're going to get it from the blogs. You know, I don't think they can dedicate the time or the expertise to this. Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, Mike.
That's it for Santa Fe Stories this week. Go to the website, santafe-stories.org, to see links to all Mike's great reporting, and look for another podcast in 2 weeks. Happy trails.
How little we know, how much to discover, what chemical forces flow.